is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at Yale. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Healthline features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. And if you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu. Or you can also call us at 1-888-234-4YCC. And if you're interested in listening to a past edition of Healthline, if you'd like to learn something about a specific type of cancer, all of our shows are now available at the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org.
Today, our show focuses on how to cope with the diagnosis of cancer. And we're very pleased to have as our special guest Dr. William Sledge, who is the George and Esther Gross Professor of Psychiatry at Yale University and the Medical Director of the Psychiatric Hospital at Yale New Haven Hospital. William, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Ed. Thanks for asking me.
Well, I'd like to start out by asking you, obviously when people hear that they have cancer, it can be very, very overwhelming. And what are some strategies that patients and their families can use to cope with the news?
Well, Ken, I think the most important thing for people to do when they get the diagnosis of cancer is to arm themselves with information about the disease and about the particular kind of disease they have. Information is so critical in this day and age. It's quite readily accessible, but to make sure it's accurate and reliable is really important to do. And the sources of information can be, in general, the internet, although one has to be careful about the internet, make sure it's accurate and reliable. Professional sources in terms of one's physician, one's oncologist, and survivorship programs are also enormously rich sources of information. And as one begins to work one's way into the cancer world of diagnosis and treatment, these resources are usually pretty readily available. And of course, other things to cope with are relying on loved ones and professional help as one is needed.
When a patient goes to see their doctor and is going to be given the news about whether or not they have cancer, should they go with a loved one or a close friend so that they have immediate support right then and there?
Well, everybody has their own particular style about that, and it's most of the time when people are in the process of getting the diagnosis, there's some anticipation that it might be coming, and it's a possibility. So it depends on how the person handles these kinds of things best. Generally speaking, it's good to have a confidant, a friend, or a family member along with you, because you never know exactly what you're going to find out, and having that support is sometimes very helpful. But I think the main thing is to think ahead and anticipate and have whatever resources you think you might need lined up for that initial consultation.
Let me ask you a related question about, sort of how people process information and news. But, some people really want to know statistics, and they find it on the internet. Other
right.
people don't want to hear statistics. What advice would you give to a patient as they're meeting with their doctor about how they like to process information?
Well, everybody, like you say, has their own particular style, and they should be true to that and follow that. There is the issue of denial that frequently becomes a part of it, and denial's gotten a bad name in mental health, and I think in a lot of healthcare circles. Denial is an important part of one's adaptive response to bad news. Denial in a pathological and extreme way keeps you from knowing what you need to know, but a little bit of denial sometimes helps people mitigate the bad news and mitigate their response. So the answer to your question is it depends on the personal style and depends on that mixture of denial that's characteristic of the patient involved.
Can you give an example of what we call pathologic denial or something where you'd say, Jesus, I think this is a problem?
Right. Well, pathological denial is when the overwhelming reality of a circumstance cannot be acknowledged and cannot be met. And so when someone is faced with an inevitable outcome like imminent death and they're not able to acknowledge it's happening, or the family member is not able to acknowledge it's happening, it keeps all the people involved from being able to do the things necessary to make this go as well as it can. But it doesn't have to be death. It can be some other elements, usually bad news, some kind of disability or expense or something that a person doesn't want to know. And when they erect every bit of psychological energy against acknowledging that, that becomes dysfunctional and keeps them from being able to do the work necessary to cope.
And William, how would you describe, you know, the other side, the so-called good denial or the more functional form of denial?
Yeah. Well, good denial is something that allows a person to go ahead maintaining hope, having a positive attitude about the possibility of a good outcome, even when the likelihood may be less. But good denial doesn't interfere with a person doing what's necessary to make that good outcome become a reality. So good denial supports hope and supports the idea of I'm going to fight this, I'm going to work to achieve this goal, even though the odds may be against me, I'm going to marshal my resources and devote myself to it. And so in a way that's not denial in a strict way, but it is a form of mitigation, if you will, of the possibly bad news.
Now, let me ask you a question. One of the things that I hear quite a great deal about, actually just recently, someone in our neighborhood, their relative was recently given a diagnosis of a particular kind of cancer. Obviously, you know, needed to deal with that, but interestingly, didn't want to tell some of their family members that they were given a diagnosis, didn't want to actually discuss with the entire family how things were going to move forward and how treatments were going to develop. I mean, what do you suggest, what do you recommend in that case?
Well, it's hard to answer that particular one without knowing all the details. But in general, not sharing the news is not usually helpful, particularly with a loved one, a close family member. The family member is going to find out and sense it anyway, is going to feel betrayed and alienated in the process, and it creates more stress and distress than is necessary. It's certainly an understandable thing that a person would want to not tell people and upset them. And it's usually the process of negotiating telling them that is the source of the support that comes later from it. So I would say the appropriate thing to do would be to address with them why they don't want to tell somebody, what is it that they're worried about, and help them get to it. Not tell them they have to tell them, but help them work it out so that they will feel that it's the natural and the right thing to do. And that process will strengthen the bonds of those people and help them to work together in supporting each other, because one of the things about a diagnosis of cancer, it doesn't affect just the person with the cancer, but it's enormously distressing to the loved ones, right. And they also have to have help and support in the process as they are helping and supporting the person with the diagnosis.
So in a sense, that discussion between a patient and their family, although very difficult, actually may be really helpful for both.
Absolutely. It is helpful for both, and that's where there might need to be some help of a professional nature to help them talk about it, facilitate it. and make it comfortable or comfortable as enough so that it will happen. But these kinds of communications are always important.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us and to Dr. William Sledge at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and please stay tuned to learn more information about coping strategies for people with cancer with Dr. William Sledge from the Yale Cancer Center.
This year, over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are smoking-related. Quitting smoking, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce an individual's risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving lung cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines, which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Well, welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. William Sledge, who is a professor of psychiatry at Yale. William, we were talking a little bit about denial, but I wanted to ask more generally. I mean, what are some of the phases that you've seen people go through when they first hear the news that they have cancer?
Well, I think it's hard to say that everybody goes through the same phases, but I would say in general, the following kinds of ideas apply. Almost everyone has a sense of shock and distress when you get the diagnosis of cancer. Even though if it's a benign or relatively benign cancer, it's virtually impossible not to feel something akin to great fear and worry. And the natural response is to try to put it out of mind, to try to mitigate it, to try to deny it in some way. But the whole business of the shock, and it never comes to you all at once. I mean, it comes to you as maybe you have cancer, then you do have it, and then there is the question of, you know, how extensive is it, what kind is it, what are the treatment options. So there's a phase of going through of kind of shock and getting all the news. And then once a person gets all the news, there's this kind of process of recovery from the shock, putting it together, figuring out what you're going to do about it, and coming up with your own approach. And it's a combination of medical and psychological and social in terms of who do you tell, how do you tell them. And then you get into whatever the treatment is, and then that becomes sometimes a source of distress itself. As you all know, it can be very arduous, and then there's the kind of the routine of it, and it gets to be something that one's more familiar with, and you're dealing with all the details of that. And then comes a process of putting it together and looking at the future and trying to plan a future that's realistic and consistent with the medical condition that one's in. For some people, they're in remission and they have normal lives to look forward to. For others, it's the ongoing struggle with the disability, the treatment, and so forth. And each instance is different and has its own kind of prognosis and its own style and its own resources available for adaptation.
William, in the last segment, you mentioned that there may be situations in which patients may need to seek professional help.
Right.
What settings would you say, you know, professional help, and what kind of professional help specifically would you recommend?
Well, I think the kind of professional help is really threefold, or maybe four. First, of course, is the medical help, and there's a huge amount of psychological wisdom entailed in the medical professionals, oncologists, the nurses, all the people who are primarily tasked with the diagnosis and treatment, primarily medically. This is a group that can be relied upon for a great deal of wisdom about the other aspects of having cancer. Sometimes, though, it becomes overwhelming to the degree where there needs to be someone who's a behavioral specialist, and that can be a social worker, or it can be a psychiatric nurse or a psychiatrist. And these people should be called upon, particularly when there's an element of extreme distress or the possibility of some kind of psychopathology like extreme depression and distress, anxiety, or sometimes people who have mental illness, their mental illness is made worse by the fear of cancer or the fact of it. Other kind of professional help is our ministers and others who are tasked in the profession of helping people and helping people sort through and give meaning in their lives. And there are many pastors and ministers who are quite capable of being helpful in this kind of way, particularly around the spiritual dimension of being sick.
We had an email that I thought was very interesting because this is from Barbara who lives in Southington. She said, I had very early breast cancer 8 years ago, and I've been left with a feeling that my body let me down, and I worry about what will happen next. What do you advise? And the reason I wanted to share this one in particular is that this is someone 8 years later, and what are your thoughts and advice?
Well, I think it's quite common for people who have cancer or have had cancer to worry about what the future is and whether it's going to recur and how it's going to recur, if it's going to recur. And it's not uncommon to feel like you've given up something in terms of health or potential in the future. But it's the human condition to get older and be giving up things all the time. So it's not far outside the realm of what we do every day. If such a feeling of distress about being betrayed or a recurrence is coming up, and the primary medical people in terms of nursing and physicians are not able to give the kind of reassurance or help one with that thought and worry, then that's a good time to seek professional psychiatric consultation to help you sort it out and work through it and understand what it means and eventually adapt to it. Because really, all of this is about basic human adaptation to an insult or an injury of an illness. And cancer is like many illnesses. It just occupies a kind of particular position in our psyche.
We have actually another interesting email, and it comes from George, who lives in Orange. My family keeps telling me that I should have a mind-over-matter approach to my treatment for cancer. Does mind-over-matter really make a difference? And I guess this email question kind of relates to the whole issue of, you know, positive versus negative outlook.
Right.
Once one is given a diagnosis of cancer.
Well, we have a lot of anecdotal evidence to believe that hope is curative in its own right. It has a potential for bringing one through difficult straits. I don't know if we have the kind of science we would like to have to support that, but there's no question that whenever you're faced with a difficult circumstance, that if you have an attitude of active involvement and engagement in it and hope, that you're going to feel better and probably do better than someone who feels like there's nothing they can do about it and has to accept whatever fate has dealt them. So hope and active engagement in terms of getting information, figuring out what to do, making your choices, and being a person who is in charge of the circumstance more than one who's a recipient of the circumstance is probably better. So biology is biology. It has an inexorable quality in our lives, and it's hard to change with just wanting it to. But There's a lot of leeway in illness and a lot of how the resiliency and adaptation helps overcome physical illness.
You know, a quick question before the break, but other types of illnesses, when people have develop heart disease or eye problems or other ailments, is cancer in the adaptation similar to that, more similar than it's different?
Well, I think it's very similar myself. The problem with any illness associated with mortality is distressing. And the each cancer is different. Each cancer has its own particular culture of either disfigurement or the quality of the treatment and what the treatment one goes through or the prognosis. So I wouldn't lump all cancers together, but say that they all are kind of different. And other chronic illnesses that can produce death, like heart disease, have that same threat of distress and the need to cope. Heart disease is a great example of one that in the complications of diabetes, where the behavior of the patient has everything to do with the outcome. Probably a little bit less so than most cancers.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your question to us at healthline@yale.edu, and we're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story. And then please stay tuned to learn more about coping with the diagnosis of cancer with Dr. William Sledge.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Fairfield.
During my annual physical last year, my GP found a swelling in my throat, which turned out to be thyroid cancer. I was 79 and thought my days might be numbered. I did some research on the internet and determined that the Yale Cancer Center was the best equipped to help me. Incredibly, I got an appointment with the chairman of surgery, Dr. Robert Udelsman. He patiently explained what would be involved to remove my thyroid gland and immediately made arrangements for my surgery. Thanks to the compassion and professionalism of his office staff at Yale, I wasn't worried about the operation. The procedure went perfectly, and my recovery was relatively quick and painless. I am now cancer-free, and I don't even have a scar to show it.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm here with Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. William Sledge, who is a professor of psychiatry at Yale. William, let me start out this third segment by asking, is a little bit about acceptance. Is acceptance a part of moving on after treatment?
Well, I think the way I would what I think you're getting at is a realistic appraisal of one's circumstance. Acceptance in terms of a passive position, as we were talking about, is probably not the most adaptive thing, but realistic appraisal is probably adaptive. Well, we know it is, actually. So I think there is a stage of realistic appraisal and planning that comes from knowing what your odds are and what your circumstance is and what you can expect for the future.
William, in the last segment, you mentioned about how patients have to go through different stages and then kind of they get into a routine once those who go on active treatment kind of go and have come into the clinic on a weekly or monthly basis. The one thing that I've actually found to be, I think, pretty consistent with a lot of patients is as they're ending their treatments, they get very, very anxious because I guess coming into clinic on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis has become so much a part of their regular routine.
Right.
And
right.
They kind of hold on to that.
Yeah.
And they're they become very fearful as we approach the end.
Right.
Your thoughts on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. That infusion service, for instance, is enormously supportive, and there's a great deal of genuine affection and caring that goes on there for patients, and I can see where it would be worrisome to give that up. As you all know, we're developing and have it already in place a variety of survivorship programs that are natural next stages for people in that circumstance. And survivorship programs are enormously helpful. That's basically a circumstance where people who are in a similar condition or with the cancer come together under the direction of some professional supervision and share information, discuss their hopes, fears, and outcomes, and inspire one another with their and support one another with their understanding. And these programs have been done in many places, and they've all shown to be very helpful. So that's a place where a unique form of support and advice comes into play and is very important to the comfort and care of people with these illnesses.
You know, I'll just mention, by the way, soon, in about 6 weeks, will be the one-year anniversary of the opening of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Program here at Yale. And we certainly welcome our listeners to call and eventually come spend an afternoon with us. And I'll just share the phone number here. It's 203-785-CARE, C-A-R-E, which is 2273.
And maybe, Ken, maybe you can just, since you're the director of the Survivorship Clinic, maybe you can just tell our listeners what type of services, you know, are available to patients who've survived their cancer treatments.
I really think, and as you know, my wife is a cancer survivor, and I think what we've tried to provide is services that are important to both medically and emotionally. And William's been a great help in sort of designing it. But each patient sees a nutritionist, a physical therapist to talk about exercise, a social worker to talk about their experience, and a nurse practitioner to really talk about wellness and being well in the future.
And obviously, if there's any concern about psycho-emotional or psychological issues, then also hopefully we can, you know, have patients see the professionals in that area.
Indeed.
All right, a quick email from Janet, who lives in West Hartford. She says, I'm presently being treated for lung cancer, and my oncologist wants me to take an antidepressant known as Lexapro. And what do you think of people taking medications, and what benefits and what side effects should I expect? I think that was one of her big concerns, was side effects.
Right. Well, the antidepressants are extremely helpful when someone is depressed, and I think the decision about taking it is one that really should be between her and her physician. And a discussion of the details of the side effects are also best done there. Everybody's a little bit different from how they respond, and I think probably the best approach is to have that discussion go on between the patient and the patient's prescriber.
And one other, I want to share with you one other email that we had too, since our, I think our time is running out, and I wanted to get these answered. this woman is named Jamie, and she's from Greenwich. She says, I'm 18 years old, and my mother, who's almost 50, is being treated for breast cancer. I'm used to a very close and open relationship, but find myself holding back now because I'm concerned that worrying her is bad for her.
Right. Well, that's a common experience of people in the family. I would encourage her to talk to her mom. Communication's always best.
Well, again, if you have questions for Dr. Sledger for Healthline, we encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information. And I want to, William, I want to thank you for joining us on Healthline.
Yeah, William, it's been great having you for this show. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Please join us next week when we discuss the important role of nutrition and cancer prevention with Dr. Susan Main. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.